we're going to be in Hebrews 11. And so today, Zach asked me to talk about one of FSM's core truths, and that's what it means to be an extraordinary follower of Jesus. And so we're going to jump into that. And here's what I know about you all right off the bat, is that you are extraordinary followers of Jesus. You know how I know that? Because the Broncos game started 20 minutes ago, and you are here. So, I'll see you guys. So, thanks for being here. But yeah, we're gonna get into that. So, I love that you guys starting in January are gonna be part of the main service. I'm so excited to just worship next to you guys. I'm so excited to see your faces. You bring so much energy and life into service. And know that you're not just going there to fill a seat. Know that you're not just going to be there just to say that you go to big church. But you're going there to bring who you are and to bring who Christ is in you to a service. And I just want to, if you guys don't know this, like, I know this about you. If I don't know you at all, I know this about you, is that you are called to change the world. Did you know that? Do you believe it? Some of you shook your heads. Most of you didn't. You're called to change the world. God's asking you, and he's given you things to change the world. And it starts with you, and it starts to go out from you. And that includes FSM. That includes the church, that includes your community, that includes the city. Wherever you go, you are called and you are gifted to change the world. And so you have to know it, one, to do it, and then you have to believe it to actually do it. And so I just wanted to say that. But so today, extraordinary follower of Jesus. Does anybody know what FSM's definition of being an extraordinary follower of Jesus is? Does anybody know it? Ish? No, nobody wants to give it a shot. Okay, I'll give it a shot. It is a person who has answered Jesus' call to deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow him. This looks like a person dedicated to worship, dedication, or holiness, mission, and prayer. So, being a part of FSM, a definition of you being part of an FSM, being part of FSM, an extraordinary follower of Christ, is that you've denied yourself, that you're taking up your cross, you're following him, and that looks like you dedicated to worship. Worship isn't just what you do for 30 minutes. Worship is a lifestyle. And so you're dedicated to a lifestyle of worship. Holiness, or being set apart, and then mission and prayer. And so today, really what God put on my heart is we're really going to be looking at really an aspect of holiness or being set apart. Let me ask you this. Who is the person in your life that most looks like Jesus? This isn't rhetorical. This is question and answer. So who in your life most looks like Jesus and why? The way they live, the way they talk. Go ahead, camp counselor, why? Yeah, okay, it's good. Your dad, it's good. Don't be shy, this is Sunday morning. It's 11:30, you should be awake. Anybody else? Nobody else. Nobody else has anybody that, yeah. Okay. Okay. So why? Why does he most look like Jesus? We'll be praying for that. Your leaders will, and I will. So, okay, here's the thing. You're not responding, and that's okay for now. But most of us have somebody that you're thinking of, right? Can we just say that? Okay, we're all thinking of somebody, and that somebody, that person has characteristics. Like, for me, it's my dad. I grew up wanting to be like my dad. I still want to be like my dad. When you're growing up, you don't necessarily enjoy your father. If he's a good dad, he disciplines you, right? That's what the Bible says. A good father corrects and disciplines. And so there is always this tension. But now that I'm older and I realize that my dad is generally right, he is one of my best friends. And I just so want to be him. I admire the way that he loves the Lord. He loves my mom, and he loves his kids, and he loves the church. If you ever see him or get in any type of conversation with him, within 5 minutes you're going to be talking about the Bible, and he's going to be telling you about the Bible probably. just an incredible man, and so that's who it is for me. Now listen, the person that you're thinking of, or the people that you spoke of, here is my definition of an extraordinary follower of Jesus. You're thinking of them because they're extraordinary, right? There's something that sets them apart. So extraordinary followers of Jesus are not ordinary. Very simple, right? It makes sense. Extraordinary or ordinary? They are not ordinary, right? Extraordinary followers of Jesus are not ordinary. You cannot be extraordinary by being ordinary. And here's the thing. Whoa, my stand started falling on me. Sorry, team. I would go a step further in that. I would say you cannot be a Christian and be ordinary. By definition, ordinary means with no special or distinctive feature. So when you come to Christ, he now calls you his son or daughter. He gives you his spirit, and he says that you were chosen from your mother's womb. This is when you come to Christ. If that is not enough, he then calls you holy because of the work of Christ, and asks you to be holy as he is holy. Holy in the Greek literally means set apart. That is completely opposite of being ordinary. So when you come to Christ, you cannot be ordinary. Because he gives you his justification. He's redeemed you. He calls you his son and daughter. And he calls you out of what you're doing. And he sets you apart. He calls you holy. And it's not a holiness of your own, but it's Christ. And that is set apart. You now no longer look like everybody else. You now no longer talk like everybody else. You no longer do what everybody else does because you are set apart. So you cannot be ordinary and be a Christian. Here's the problem, that most of us settle and are okay to live our lives just ordinary. Is that a problem? That's a problem. We settle for 2 hours on Sunday and maybe 2 hours on Wednesday, depending on what else is going on. We are okay to simply just fit in with the crowd. If you are a follower of Jesus, then God has extraordinary things for you. And it's a lifestyle. It's not just a couple hours during the week. You are set apart. You cannot be extraordinary by being ordinary. If you don't remember anything else from today, is that simple enough to remember? Can you keep that up? You cannot be an extraordinary follower of Jesus by being ordinary. You cannot be extraordinary by being ordinary. Remember that if you don't remember anything else. So here's the question that I know everybody in here is asking yourself. Joe, what is the root of being an extraordinary follower of Jesus? That's what you're all asking yourselves. That's a great question. That's a great question that you're all thinking and asking. And I'm glad that you're asking that, because I'm going to answer that for you. So in that, let me ask you, I'm going to ask you two questions. To be an extraordinary follower of Christ, you have to be a great listener. You have to be able to listen. Is anybody in here, would you consider yourself a great listener? It's okay. We're not going to chastise you for being arrogant or prideful. Not yet. No? I got a handshake, you know. Okay, a couple. It's okay. It's good. You have to be a great listener to be an extraordinary follower of Christ. The other thing is, are you willing to do what God's asking you to do? Can you hear what he's saying? And are you going to do what he's asking you to do? That's an extraordinary follower of Christ. It's extremely hard to follow someone you do not listen to. You can still follow maybe by actions, but it's extremely hard to do it. In turn, if you were not listening to somebody, it is impossible to do what they are asking you to do. It's impossible to do what they're asking you to do. Extraordinary followers of Jesus listen to and do what God is asking. So we're going to jump into Hebrews 11. It's also known as the Hall of Faith. If you didn't catch it, they played on Hall of Fame. It's very, very witty, very funny. If you're not laughing, you're not very funny yourself. But it's very funny. Hall of Faith. Hebrews 11. So we're going to look at these people who were commended for their extraordinary faith. From the start of this chapter, the author gives a definition of what faith is. Hebrews 11, verse 1, it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. And then again in verse 6, it says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. So in this chapter, the author says, by faith or through faith 19 times. That's a bunch of times, right? So if it is impossible to please God without faith, we better know what that actually looks like. So we're not going to read the whole chapter 11. We're just going to look and check out everywhere the author says by faith. So we're going to go through this fairly quickly. I think we're going to have it on the screen as well. But starting in verse 4, it says, by faith, Abel offered a more acceptable sacrifice to God. Verse 5, by faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death. Verse 7, by faith, Noah constructed an ark for the saving of his household. Verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. Verse 9, by faith, Abraham went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land. Verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive. Verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. Verse 20, by faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. Verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph. Verse 22, by faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. 23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents. Verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. 27, by faith, Moses left Egypt. Verse 28, by faith, Moses kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood of the lamb. Verse 29, by faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. Verse 30, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. Verse 31, by faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient. Verses 32 through 34, by faith, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. And then to end the chapter, starting in verse 35, it says, by faith, Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. So that's 19 times in Hebrews 11. It says, by faith or through faith. And here's the thing is most of us really love the first 18. The end of that chapter is rough, right? It's very rough. It says others suffered mocking and flogging, chains, imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two, literally sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated. And this is what the author said. The world was not worthy of them. How many of you, by faith, would love to do what the author just described these people went through? How many would love that to happen? Kerry McFadden, great leader. By faith. One person, maybe half a person. Nobody wants that to happen, but by faith, this is what happened. By faith, they acted out, and by faith, they lived out and did what God asked them to do, and this is what happened to them. You are not guaranteed a pleasant life. Can I tell you that? You're not guaranteed for everything to go well. We have been so fortunate and blessed to grow up in a Western civilization where there's a ton of freedom, right? But right now in the Middle East, people, this is happening to people right now today. And I'm going to tell you, it's coming. I don't know when. I'm not going to be Nostradamus. But it's coming. By faith will you live out and do what God's asking you to do. In all of these things, there is hearing God, right? These people, by faith, heard what God was asking them to do, right? And then they did what he's asking. There's not a separation. You cannot be an extraordinary follower of Jesus, hear what he says, and then not do what he says. Because he says, those who love me do what I ask them to do. They obey my commands. You cannot separate the two. These men and women did not allow themselves to fit in. They didn't just blend in with the crowd. They didn't do what everybody else did. They dared to have enough faith in the Lord to listen and obey. And here's the crazy thing. 5,000 years later, we're talking about them. We're talking about them. And if you look at some of these things and you read them like Moses left Egypt, it doesn't sound like a big thing. In context, he led millions of people out of Egypt. It said Sarah herself, in faith, she bore a child, right? Noah constructed an ark. That's a little obscure. Abel offered a more acceptable sacrifice to God. But some of these things, some are crazy and obscure, right? But some are just ordinary. Abraham moved from one place to the next. But it was by faith. And he was doing what God was asking him to do. And in that, there's a reward. In that, he brought his people, he brought Israel into a promised land. Just by moving his family. But it took extraordinary faith. Now let me just ask you this one question. What if they would not have acted on what they heard the Lord say? Have you ever thought about that? How many of you have read Hebrews 11? A couple, half, we'll say half. What if, have you ever thought, those of you who have read it, what if they didn't do what God asked them to do? Have you ever thought about that? For instance, what about in Jericho? Do most people know the story of Jericho? So Jericho happens in Joshua chapter 6, which is in the Old Testament. Just to give a precursor to what happened, they were heading into the Promised Land, and this is Israel, the place where previously 12 spies said that there were giants living there, and there was no way to win, there was no way to pass. All but two spies gave this report. Joshua and Caleb were the only two to say, "With the Lord, we can take it." Now, do you remember who God chose to lead the Hebrews after Moses and Aaron? You remember that? It was Joshua. I'll give you one guess for the second one. Not rhetorical. Caleb. Okay. You may have said it. I have hard hearing at this point in my life. So, I'm getting old. I'm 31. Joshua and Caleb, because they believed what God said, and they were willing to act out what God said. And here's the thing, because the people rebelled against God, they disobeyed against God, because Moses disobeyed against God and struck the rock out of anger, right? God didn't allow Moses to enter into the Promised Land. So he allowed a generation to pass away for the next generation to come and do it. And he chose Joshua and Caleb to go in. So here's the thing, in Joshua chapter 6 says, God's talking to Joshua, and he says, "You're basically," this is the JCV, the Joe Candelaria version. He says, "You're not gonna go in and fight. You're not gonna win this battle initially with a fight." He said, You take pretty much the marching band, and the marching band, the priests, they're going to take their trumpets and the horns, and you're going to walk around the walls of Jericho one time each day for 6 days, and you're just going to play the music for 6 days. Then he says, on the seventh day, you're going to walk around 7 times, and all the while you're walking around, you're not going to say a word. You're just going to play music. Seventh day, 7 times, play music, and at the end, when you get around the seventh time, you're going to shout. Everybody's going to shout. How crazy is that? It's the only picture that I can get is, say, in a football game, the other team shows up, and the home team is ready to play, football team standing on the side, and the marching band, the clock starts, the marching band starts playing, walking around the field. How crazy is that? Is that crazy? Football player? Grant, is that right? Zach, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Zach. I apologize. So would that be weird? Like the marching band walks around and you're just standing on the sideline. Clock started, game started. A little weird. Not normal. So God asked this of them. And on the seventh day, I can't imagine just being there with them, right? And like being a part of this army, the Israelites, and ready to fight, and just hearing, "Nope, the band's gonna go around, you're not gonna do it." That's crazy. And then can just picture on the seventh day walking 7 times around. Can you just feel the emotion of that? Like I can only imagine the doubt, right? I can only imagine. I would feel stupid. That's me. I would feel super stupid. Like, why are we walking around the walls for these to come down? The tension, the fear, the potential excitement of what if this actually happens? Like this, this weekend we took the res. Ian Palmer here, everybody, is one of my sons currently. We took him up to a cabin for a weekend trip, and just to get away, a little res retreat. There was tension. Let me just tell you this. You know, you guys know the water bottles that you screw and you build the tension in and then you spin the cap off, and it's super sweet. Okay, it's not that sweet, but okay, it is. So there, one of the guys in the house was doing this, and there was tension just waiting for the cap to come off, right? Have you ever been in, I don't know, maybe you guys aren't that lame, but apparently I'm that lame. So there was just expectancy for the cap to come flying off of this little water bottle that was meaningless. Can you imagine the expectation of walking around 7 times? And then God's saying, when you shout, the walls are going to fall. Just imagine, like, the tension, the expectation, the fear, the doubt. But here's the thing, you doing it. You doing what God's asking you to do. Them doing what God asked them to do. And then as soon as they shouted, the walls came down. That would be nuts. That would be nuts. That would be the craziest thing that you would experience in your life. The craziest thing. What if they hadn't have done it? What if they hadn't walked around? What if Joshua would have said, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. I'm going to look like an idiot in front of my people, in front of my friends, in front of my family. I'm going to look like an idiot, and they're going to call me an idiot. What if he would have said, I'm going to do what I know to do, and that's fight. I'm going to do what God's made me to do, and just did that rather than doing what God asked him to do. It's solely speculation. I believe that that generation, along with Joshua and Caleb, would have died out, and God would have rose up the next generation to take them into the promised land, because that's what he did before with Moses. They wouldn't have got to see the promise of God. They wouldn't have got to see the faithfulness of God. How many of you have experienced the faithfulness of God? Like, legitimately. There's not a better feeling when you ask God for something and when he talks back to you and he actually does what he says he's going to do. There's not a better feeling in this life. Imagine if they wouldn't have done it. But they chose not to be ordinary. They chose not to do just what everybody else was doing. They chose to listen to God and then to do what he asked them to do. And God showed his faithfulness. And they experienced his victory because of the obedience. That can be you. You don't have to see the faithfulness of God in somebody else and through somebody else's life. You don't have to look the same as everybody else. In fact, God's made you extraordinary and he's set you apart. Now, the question that you're probably asking yourselves, and it's a good question, and I'm glad you're about to ask it, is how do I know when God is speaking to me? It's a great question, and I'm glad you're asking it. I'm going to answer that. So here's the thing. We hear 4 voices. Did you know that? And it's not crazy to hear 4 voices. Does anybody, if you're hearing 5, it's a little weird. Does anybody know what the 5 voices, or the 4 voices? The 4 voices. You hear yourself. Go ahead. Not rhetorical. You hear the Lord. You hear the enemy, Satan. Others. You hear 4 voices, right? You hear your own thoughts. You hear the voice of the Lord, you hear the voice of the enemy, and you hear the voice of others. So how do you distinguish? Ears, Here's how you know that the Lord is speaking to you. One, it's never contrary to his word. It's never against what he's said in his word. So here's one that I've heard a lot. I'm going to go out and party and drink and do this so I can better fit in, and then I can be a witness and I have more conversation with these people. That's not true. Why is it not true? I'll tell you. Because that's against the word of God. Don't be a drunkard. Be sober-minded. That is untrue. That is not the voice of the Lord. I've heard that a lot. Second, there will be godly counsel that agrees with what you're feeling or what you're sensing. Now, this comes in who you hang out with, right? If who you're hanging out with is out partying and out, you know, smoking weed and out doing whatever, if those are the people you're listening to, you're probably not getting godly biblical counsel. I guarantee you that. I used to be that guy. You're not getting biblical counsel. Firsthand, you're not. Godly counsel. Your friends, are they living out what the Bible's asking them to do? Are they in submission to their parents? That's something that God asks you to be in. Your leaders. If your leaders are here because they're godly. If they weren't, they wouldn't be here. So godly counsel will affirm what you're hearing or feeling. Third, it will resonate in your own spirit. You know, if you are a child of God, you know, Hebrews says that a loving father corrects and disciplines his children. If you get a feeling about going and doing something and it's unsettling, like, have you ever went and done something and it's just unsettling, like, you almost want to puke? I have. Or you're just thinking about something, or, you know, whatever it is, like, that's your spirit not resonating with what you're thinking, feeling, or about to do, or doing. It will resonate. God's disciplining you. And then fifth, God always speaks truth. Always. And this is kind of in conjunction with the Bible. So God always speaks truth. He renews our thinking that we are loved and that he wants the highest good for us. He speaks with clarity. It's not complicated. He speaks in your own language. He's not going to go speak Greek to you when you don't know Greek. He's not going to speak in these, thys, and thous when you don't speak King James. It's very clear. It's gentle. It instills hope and it establishes intimacy.